Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Celtic State of Mind, Colin Watt joined me at 28 minutes past, followed by Amy at 29. I was going to do the old Ian Brown solo thing for an hour, but we thought better of that. The band are back. Welcome back, Amy Canavan. How are you?
Oh, bands are extremely important, aren't they? I think that's been shown even more so in the last 24 hours, 48 hours or so. So yeah, no flying solo today, thankfully, thankfully.
I love Ian Brown, by the way. I do.
To be fair, Paul, I think you'd have probably carried it better than he did last night. So
I think anyone pretty.
You've clearly never heard me singing, Colin. I did have for about 18 months. Remember my Ian Brown mug?
Yep.
Yeah.
Remember? But I gave it away. Because we lost the 10. And I thought it was something to do with the mug, so I gave it away. I'm very superstitious that way. We have loads to talk about. The international football isn't away yet. I know that Colin and Amy are big fans of the international game. How's the last couple of weeks with Celtic been for you, first of all, Colin?
It's frustrating because I want to see what the response is to that result at the Smyzer Stadium. I want to see how Celtic bounce back really quickly. But I have enjoyed the performances on the international level. I was able to get along to the game on Saturday night, and it was a great atmosphere at Hampden. And do you know what? I think it helps when Scotland actually put out a decent team and they're actually doing well, because you can start to get involved. When it was back in the days when you were getting beat off the likes of the Faroe Islands and stuff like that, I think it's very easy as a youngster just to turn your attention away from the national scene. But got to say, Steve Clarke's done a fairly decent job since he's taken over, and I'm looking forward to Tuesday night to see how, hopefully, Scotland don't end up in another glorious failure moment.
Well, I will come back to you on that, Colin. We were going to be talking about Celtic, and there's always a way to link in international football due to the players that represent their countries. Amy, you're a fan yourself. You cover it as part of your career. And I think what Colin says is right. We do have a decent crop. There's a lot of talent in Stevie Clarke's squad. I think Stevie Clarke is very good at what he does. I know that he has been linked. He's even been interviewed for the Celtic job on one occasion. I don't think that the brand of football would have really suited Celtic fans, to be honest. But what he's done with Scotland has been pretty remarkable, I think, after such a period of time. You can't take that for granted. Such a period of time with no success. A whole generation of people like yourself and Colin never having seen a successful Scotland side, yet he does have a very good crop of players. There's a few in there. I was looking at the international cap totals, Amy. There's a few that potentially will get up to the, 75 cap, maybe even 100 cap mark, and quite a few of them heading towards 50 caps. He's got a really good nucleus of a side there.
Yeah, it is a great time, actually, to be a Scotland fan. I was there on Saturday too, and I thought it was a great atmosphere, thoroughly enjoyable. Not as dominant a performance as it was against Ukraine in midweek, but you're never going to get two back-to-back performances like that. Steve Clarke, he's just such an interest. He's so pragmatic, obviously, but just when you think the knives are potentially going to come out again, he just turns up trumps and pulls off a performance and puts out a team as he did last week against Ukraine. You know, I think if that went wrong, it really could have been a hell of a different conversation this week. But it is a good crop of players and he's using them well. You know, I don't know how many times, like, I think Scotland's probably got 7 or 8 defenders out right now, and you wouldn't hit panic stations. Mm-hmm. You know, and I don't think we're hitting a panic station right now. Like, there's obviously doubts going into tomorrow. It's not the back line that you would want. That's obvious if you've got 7, 8 players out, but there's not like a total and utter panic. We're not all, you know, scared right now. It's, there's still so much confidence in the players he has. He's bringing the best out of players. Takes time sometimes to play them in the right position. You know, like your Scott McTominay's, you're finally seeing the best of him in midfield. But it's a good time. It's not a great time, but it's a good time. They're certainly on the right track.
I tell you what, Paul, it's interesting when you look at the players that are in that squad and how many of them have been at Celtic, have been linked with Celtic, have come across as targets for Celtic before. I remember we were linked with a move for Scott McTominay just as he broke into the Manchester United team. And then you look at the sort of back four or the back five, you're looking at Kieran Tierney, Aaron Hickey, who was obviously at Celtic, Jack Hendry. How many times were we linked with a move for Scott McKenna, Craig Gordon, John McGinn, obviously the sort of famous one. Ryan Christie.
Don't call him. Didn't he bring that name up again?
Ryan Christie.
There needs to be a John McGinn Claxon.
I know. But even like Ryan Christie, Stuart Armstrong, I think we were linked to a move for Ryan Fraser at one point as well when he was leaving Aberdeen. Mm-hmm. It just shows you that when you look at what we were talking about last week and the players coming through and that sort of lost generation, there is a talent pool that Celtic is producing, whether it be current players that are there just now, the likes of Greg Taylor and Callum McGregor in the midfield, or players that have been at Celtic before. I was trying to think, when you look back at after Aaron Hickey went off, and you were looking at the back four with Greg Taylor, Anthony Ralston, Jack Hendry, Craig Gordon, is that potentially one of the back lines we could have seen under Brendan Rodgers and probably said, that's a really poor team we've put out today?
Well, I almost picked you up for mentioning Ryan Christie, because we could have had a compilation, Colin, of your comments about the bold Ryan Christie, particularly his shooting prowess.
I tell you what, so I was standing on Saturday night, just as Scotland got that penalty, and the boy in front of me, he was a nice enough guy, I was talking away to him, was a jambo. And as soon as it worked out that Ryan Christie was taking that penalty, the two of us with our heads in our hands going, please God, no. He'd obviously seen Ryan Christie missing penalties, as had I. And we were kind of hoping John McGinn would have took it, but no. He took it very well. I think Bazinu diving early kind of helped him out. But yeah, looking at that squad, the amount of sort of Celtic influence that's in there is really impressive.
Oh, you're right.
And it just shows you that although Lennox Town gets pandered sometimes for players kind of moving away early or not getting that breakthrough, we are developing for the national scene as well.
We're always developing players. This is a conversation we've had, Colin, and I think this will lead into another topic of conversation, because you ask yourself, you've mentioned a couple of names there, would it have been different had Ange Postecoglou been in the door earlier? I actually think yes. When you look at players like Aaron Hickey coming out just over the last week or so saying he knew he would get more opportunities by signing for Hearts as a youngster than staying at his boyhood team Celtic, and the rest, as they say, is history. But we then talk about what Darren O'Day's been saying during the week around the way that Ange Postecoglou involves himself almost as a director of football when looking at the A team and the B team, and whether, you know, these players would have slipped through the net. That's a conversation that we definitely will have. But Ryan Christie, I've said it before and I'll say it again, Amy, he's a guy I would have loved to have seen him under Ange Postecoglou for longer than we did. I think he would have been really well suited to this system.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair statement, and it's one of those what ifs. I think if there's any player probably who left just before Ange, that's the one that sticks out. You go, he really could have been something under him. You know, the fluidity that he's allowed, the creativity, just not having to be set in stone to a single position. I thought he was outstanding for Scotland on Saturday as well. Thought he was one of the better players, because like I said, it wasn't a completely dominant performance. There was a lot of mediocre showing, to put it that way, but I thought Christie was a standout, and you just see him pick up positions. The link up, obviously, he's going to still be there with Greg Taylor and Callum McGregor, but just gets himself into positions, and you can just think, just slightly playing behind the striker, whoever it may be, just that like I say, fluidity along that free. I think he would be instrumental to that. But if buts and maybes, and you know, then maybe we wouldn't have seen the best out of Abada, Jota, O'Reilly, whoever it may be. You know, it's you win some, you lose some. It's like you know, there's going to be pros and cons on either.
Absolutely. Anybody in the crowd going to see Ian Brown tonight in Glasgow or in Edinburgh tomorrow? I'd just like to qualify what I said at the top of the show. I love Ian Brown. The Stone Roses are by far the greatest band ever in terms of my musical upbringing. And I think it was a bold move to stand there and sing his tunes to a backing track. And also, the support band, Dermo, I can tell you with some certainty that big Stephen Ness, who plays guitar for Dermo, is of a Celtic state of mind. Nice big Celtic tattoo on his forearm. And I know that because obviously he played in the session that we did a few weeks back, which is on the channel. However, talking of live events, Colin, I know you went to see Kevin Bridges the other week. Right, I managed to get to see him on Saturday night with the good lady. And whilst I was kicking about, I was spoken to by a few people who tune into the show. So a big shout out to everybody who came up to talk about Celtic and Axon. It's always appreciated. It's interesting how you never get any of the half-wits, do you, Colin? It's always the nice guys that come up and speak to you. So a big shout out to John, who is nursing a sore leg. Hopefully you get back to work soon, John. It was good to catch up with you, mate. Amy, did you get a chance to see Kevin this time round?
I didn't, no. I've been in Glasgow a lot when it's... during this 3-4 week seems like 6 months stint, honestly. Just every time you leave the building around 7 o'clock through at Pacific Quay, there's just hordes of people. It's hellish to get out of Glasgow right now. But no, from what I've heard, it was knocked out of the park every single time, and wouldn't expect anything else.
I have to ask, Paul, was there a fight when you were there?
No fights. He spoke about the fights. He did speak about, yes.
You're about 50-50 depending on which night you go to, whether there's a fight or not. It's unbelievable.
Is it just too much bevy, or
I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, no, there was no fights, just plenty of laughs. I've started off with this tagline, just a story I was reading this morning. You will have seen it, I'm sure, that there has been a list printed of the top 100 best supported football teams, or most supported football teams in the world, and Celtic are sitting number 13. On that list. Very impressive when you read the names that are above us. And it's a conversation, Colin, I think it's crept in a few times on a Celtic state of mind around increasing the capacity of the stadium. Some people in the comments may have already said this. I've not seen the comments yet coming in. They might say, well, you know, it wasn't that long ago we were covering the top tier with big banners. But I think over the piece, if you were to look at the average attendance at Celtic Park, Colin, since the redevelopment of Celtic Park, it will be around that mark. I think we were shown as being 53,000, was it, average attendance, or was it 58,000?
58,000 for last season, yeah.
Which is astonishing. And I don't think it would be much lower than that if you were to look at it since we came back and the full stadium was built. Is it time to start looking again at that main stand, do you think? Bring it right up to the same level as the rest of the stadium?
Do you know that there's always that debate, and it's been going on, as you say, for a number of years about the increased capacity. And I know when it's been brought up at like the fans forums and stuff like that, has always been the cost of the development to do so, because the sort of main area that can be done is the main stand, as it is the where it's kind of got that protected status. I'm not sure it's a fully listed building, but I do think it's got some sort of protected status over it, so it would take a lot of work to sort of get around that. Looking at it, when you see people that's done the sort of artist's impression of what it would look like, it does look like a really impressive stadium. Would we have any trouble filling it out against teams like Real Madrid, Leipzig, Rangers, anyone like that? I doubt it. And there's plenty of people who say, there's so many people still on the waiting list to get in and stuff like that. But I'm not 100% certain that it's a priority for Celtic just now. I mean, you look at some of the stuff that you've kind of had on the go for a while now, like the redevelopment of Barrafields, the idea of the museum and the sort of hotel and stuff like that. Now, these have been put back years from when they were supposed to have been actually...
Well, like, that's the thing. I was talking last night, Colin, that the hotel chat probably started when I started writing my latest book. And I've actually finished my book before they managed to build the museum, which I'm amazed at, because that's taken me 7 years. So, priorities indeed. I'm just having a wee look at the comments just now to see what your thoughts are on it. And some people are saying what I thought you would in relation to the priorities that Colin was talking about, Colin. I remember talking to somebody up at the club and they were going on about the museum and how great it would be. But if you build a museum, and let's say, I don't know what the cost is, say it costs you £3 million, right? And you have an injury crisis and you need a new centre-half, I'm pretty sure the Celtic support, me included, would be crying out for that £3 million to be put elsewhere. But think back to Fergus McCann, Amy. Think back to him saying... basically build it and they will come. We built a 60,000 all-seater stadium when our average attendance was nowhere near 58,000. Yet, all these years later, and we are in the top 20 most supported clubs on the globe. Is it a case of putting that extra tier on the main stand? I think someone worked out that it would take 17 years to pay for itself. The actual main stand, the actual cost of development, it would take 17 years if you were to sell those tickets for that period of time to pay for itself. And the club's obviously looking at that. What do you reckon, Amy? Is it about time we did that? What would the capacity be if we were to increase that? Would that take it 75, maybe? 75,000?
Probably something around that, yeah. I agree with Colin that, yeah, there's going to be that argument that, you know, there are numerous on the waiting list that, you know, in the big game, certainly I've got no shadow of a doubt that it would sell out. But like Colin, I just think there are more pressing matters at hand right now and have been at hand probably for the best part of 10, 15 years and still not completely sorted out. I think it's just take one thing at a time, get the training facilities and Barfield back up to where it should be. It's taken far too long anyway. You know, as you say as well, it only takes for, let's say, a defender crisis, something like that, and you need money. I think there are better ways to be, or where, better areas rather, where the money should be getting placed right now. And, you know, it's going to be an argument that it'll go on forever. You know, you'll go up to 75 and then 10 years down the line, someone will go, right, mate, go up to 90 or something. It's just one of these continual conversations. I think every top football team has it. Certainly, you know, even when there's absolutely no need for it, it's just one of those conversations that can always start a debate and that will always be relevant somehow because somebody will manage, you know, they'll pull out one of these lists and then it becomes almost relevant again.
I think, Paul, if it wasn't for the fact that COVID came about and made those sort of 2 years of lost revenue, then perhaps things like Barrafield and the museum and that would be more feasible, or we'd actually see a bit of progress done on it. But there's also the fact that if we have one poor season where we don't qualify for Europe, then the lost revenue that comes into that is very hard to replace. You'd be talking about having to sell some of our biggest players to try and break even. When you look at the financial accounts that came out the other day, yeah, it is things like player sales that keep us in the red when we're not necessarily progressing in Europe. Obviously, things will be different next year when you get the likes of the Champions League money coming into it. And hopefully, by winning the league again this year, you'll not have to worry about that for a couple of years. But if you had that on a consistent basis, then perhaps you'd be able to put that money aside that is required to develop things like Barrafield and to build the hotel and the stadium. And we would see progress on that. But the kind of lack of progress in Europe, because that is where we can make our biggest bit of profit, is probably the reason why these things are behind, alongside the likes of COVID.
You're right.
So it's either you invest in the squad and you keep the squad together, like we've talked about, or you say, right, okay, we'll do what teams like Arsenal and Man United and Spurs done, and we'll just say, right, we're investing in our infrastructure, we're not really investing in our team, and then you might have a couple of years without the success, and then you're saying, right, where are we actually at then? Because when we had that couple of years where there was no competition in Scotland. You mentioned the banners earlier on. So it's a sort of damned if you do, damned if you don't, without having the money behind you to do so.
You know what? I think we should do both. I think we should be able to invest in the team and invest in the infrastructure and in the stadium as well. And I absolutely get what you mean with regards to the financials that have just come out, Colin. And it would seem that Champions League qualification equals no player sales. Because we spoke about it at the beginning of this season, that for the first time in 5 years, Amy and I were bold one Monday, you'll remember it, Amy, and we're saying no one's leaving Celtic. And we were right, by the way, Amy. We have not been back on to sit there all smug and say, you know, Fabrizio who? Is that his name? Aye, so you were right. Although he has been nominated, by the way, for one of these football content awards down in Manchester. I'm pretty sure he won't be coming over for Italy. But in saying that, we were at a table last year with people from Russia who came over. And we actually beat them to the award, which was interesting, seeing how they had travelled all the way over just to get an award. However, we will be down there the month after next, in November, if you want to vote for a Celtic State of Mind in the Best Video Creator category. The link is underneath this video, so please do. As I say, it's great to get the support. It's great to bump into people randomly who say, oh, I love Axon, that's tremendous. And I mean that sincerely, because obviously everybody that's involved with the Celtic State of Mind has at some point or other come in for some kind of online flack or abuse, Colin, and it's great to actually get the positivity and the positive element, because these negative ones never ever come anywhere near you in real life, do they? They never come anywhere near you.
It's funny,
It's funny. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Gary Melrose, definitely, I'd love to see standing room significantly expanded too. Do you think that's something the club would consider? Expanding it, because there's going to be two sections.
Yeah.
And you know, it's one of these things. I think if you increase the capacity, then it's giving you scope for that percentage, obviously, to increase as well. Ridiculizer, you're back in on YouTube. Welcome back. Is the main stand not a listed building, which would impede increased capacity to a certain degree? I do remember when the fascia got an uplift back in the centenary season. And I remember the looking at the plans and the fact that it was built out in the wall that was previously the entrance to the stadium remained where it was, and it was basically built around that wall. And there were some issues with regards to the fact that it was difficult to do anything with the changing rooms to bring it up to the category required for it to hold big events like the Champions League final, etc., because of some issues. But I'm not so sure, like Colin said before, if it's actually a listed building. One thing I always found interesting, though, was the Celtic stained glass window that used to be above the entrance to the front door was thought to be lost for years and years. And then Margot McQuaig, who used to work for the Celtic media team, found it. And it was behind a wall, behind a fake wall in the stadium. And there's this beautiful stained glass, and it's now obviously used in the stadium. You see it if you go on the stadium tour. Beautiful bit of history, which in fact, Amy, inspired the kit, the third kit last season, the white one with the pink and the green, the colour scheme.
That
was a cracker, that. I wasn't keen on it to begin with, but yeah, it definitely did. It did grow in me. Yeah, but that was the first topic of conversation, but it does lead us on, Colin, as well. I know that both of you watch with interest the B team. Amy, you've got some really strong views on where they sit in terms of the Scottish football pyramid, but I was really interested to hear Darren O'Day's interview recently. Was it Off the Ball, it's called? It is called Off the Ball, the Irish show. I remember that time they asked us to appear on it, and I was thinking it was a podcast. And then they dialed me in and it was live. I'm just sitting in my kitchen and the hair's all over the camera. It normally is anyway, but it was even worse that night because I didn't realise it was on camera. And he's talking about the way Ange oversees the B team, Colin. And he's talking, he used the terminology like a director of football. And it...
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing, and now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino-style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere, and each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Took me back to a conversation that we had on this very show a while back, whereby, again, forward planning, succession planning. Should we be planning that for Ange Postecoglou anyway? All this talk about him going to Brighton and Leicester and any other big team that sacks their manager is about to part company with a manager, and Ange Postecoglou's name is going to be touted by the press. Why don't we have a plan for him? Why can't we have him as a director of football, bringing in the next manager, getting that next manager to work along the same kind of way that Ange works, and then for Ange to take that wee step up? Is that something that you think is too optimistic? Has he got other ambitions?
I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if there's something very similar going on at the club just now. I mean, we always spoke about the fact that he came in and he didn't change who his coaching staff was. He had the players, he had the coaches there, and he always said he wanted to work and learn from them, which probably helped in the transition period, because these people knew Scottish football probably a bit more than what Ange Postecoglou did. And now, this summer, he's brought in Harry Kewell, and you can see that Harry's working very closely with Ange on the training ground and also before the games and stuff like that. Would I be surprised if someone like Harry Kewell or John Kennedy or even to an extent Gavin Strachan, that's three people who have either had management experience like Harry Kewell or been linked with jobs down south like Gavin Strachan did, and John Kennedy's been linked with the Hibs job every time it comes up every 6 months.
Remember, I mean, Strachan did manage a game for Celtic. Can you remember?
I do. Was it not the two games he got?
Did he get Was it Livingston? I just remember the Hibs. I remember he was the manager for the Hibs game.
I think he maybe got the Livingston game as well. Oh, I'm not 100%. Wow. I need to double check that.
Undefeated.
Yeah, done well, didn't he? Him and the iPad, what a combination. But no, I wouldn't be surprised if people like that are being sort of moulded into the Ange style. Mm-hmm. So that it would help with the succession planning. But I mean, these guys must look around and look at Ange and say, I'm learning from one of the best in the game just now. And the fact that they're able to absorb that information, I mean, I think it's only now when you listen to the pundits from down south and you listen to the pundits kind of worldwide that they're saying, this guy came from under the radar and suddenly he's one of the hottest prospects in world football. And he's done that at age 50-odd. Usually, if you're a hot prospect in the management game, you're someone who's maybe been in the game 4 or 5 years, not someone who has already taken his country to a World Cup, has already won trophies at multiple levels across the world. But it's only because he's had that exposure at Celtic that suddenly people have opened their eyes and went, actually, this guy's really good.
Do you think, we've spoken before, Amy, about a snobbery that exists if you manage on certain continents, and there seems to be this European snobbery where it's, you know, somebody needs to take a chance, but these bigger clubs, and I say bigger in terms of their vast quantities of cash that they are able to borrow, these bigger clubs or richer clubs won't take the chance. They'll wait for a club like Celtic to take the chance, if indeed it was a chance and a gamble, as I called it at the time. And they wait until Celtic go and take the chance on, as a player, Virgil van Dijk, or as a manager, Ange Postecoglou, and then they're prepared to throw money at them and try and get them into their own regime. What's your thoughts? Is it just a wee bit too ambitious for me to think that we could maybe find a place at the club that suits Ange Postecoglou and that would benefit us beyond his tenure as the head coach?
I don't think it's too ambitious. I don't know if it's too... I don't know quite the feasibility of it. I think more than not, like a slight on Celtic in any way before anyone comes jumping on, but I think he does have ambitions himself. You know, he's never shied away from that, hence that he came over here in the first place because he saw Europe as ambition. You know, and if he keeps going the way that he's going and clubs bigger than the two that were, you know, in fact, the Leicester job's not even available. But the Brighton, but, you know, I've got a problem. Like, I don't care if it's Brendan Rodgers or not. I've got a problem with that. You know, someone's in a job, don't start touting someone else for it. But that's just personally me. But when the Brighton job came available, you know, there was serious concerns amongst the fan base that, you know, maybe it was the first kind of hurdle, wasn't it? It's like, you know, it's the first test. Will he go at the first jump? And obviously surpass that one. So when bigger clubs than that come across, then, you know, it's just this partial of being a success. You know, everyone wants a bit of that. And the top dogs, they're not going to do the dirty work and, you know, trying to build someone up. They just want someone to come in, a quick fix. And if Ange Postecoglou looks to be ready-made, which, you know, he's certainly going along that way right now, then his name's always going to be chucked around. But that's a flattery as well. I think you've got to take it that way. You know, that Man United, when they're looking for their next manager in 7 months, then if Hibs are six, we'll go Man United seven. You know, they're going to be looking for a ready-made because they don't want to develop anyone, any coach, any player, any anything. So, yeah, I think you've just got to take it as a compliment that big clubs have got their eyes on the team, the manager, whoever it may be, and yeah, you're obviously doing something right.
These big clubs will not take the risk. Even see when they're sort of getting towards the relegation stages and they get rid of a manager that they've brought in, who they've maybe given them 6 months, and then they'll go, right, we need a experienced head in there. And it's all the sort of old school names that come out, and they don't maybe turn to someone who could lay the foundations the way that Ange is doing here at Celtic. I mean, you take a look at that Bodo Glimt manager, what is it, Kedril Knutson, is that his name? The Bodo Glimt manager?
Yeah, the current one, yeah.
Yeah, the current one. When you look at it, what he's done by laying the foundations there, they've went on to have great success in Europe. They've won the league back-to-back. He's been the manager of the year 3 or 4 times. And you're thinking, right, well, where has he been linked with? He get linked to the Hibs job. Someone of that out could easily step into the English Championship, the English Premiership, but there is that snobbery towards, oh, well, here's Alex Ray. He's now at Reading alongside Paul Ince. We know who Paul Ince is. We'll just give him the job, sort of thing, instead of taking the risk on these sort of managers.
The old boys act. Always will be in football.
Well, I think, you know, Celtic were bold, and I actually felt that they were pretty bold when they appointed Ronnie Dyler for the same reason. There was a guy that obviously had been on the radar of the City Group, as had Ange Postecoglou, but Celtic were the team that took what would be a calculated risk on someone who, again, had been successful in a country that perhaps we didn't rate as a football nation. And that's wrong as well, because I think there was a lot that Ronnie Dyler did well when he came to Celtic. I think his legacy is still at Celtic in the likes of Callum McGregor, for example, and some of the players that we've already spoken about today that left the club, Kieran Tierney and Ryan Christie and others that developed massively under Ronnie. So I think it's good that Celtic have been bold in their appointment of Big Ange, but I just want to keep him. I want to keep him at Celtic, and if it's not as a manager, then move him upstairs into a director of football role.
Would you say it was just the wrong time for someone like Ronnie Dyler to take over at Celtic?
I think partly because, for me, when you look at it, and this is with hindsight, Colin, of course, it's a lot easier looking at it that way, but I just feel that he had a bigger impact on younger, more impressionable players. And I think that there was that whole issue with more senior players who didn't buy into his methods. And the worst example of that was the away game against Mould, when Chris Commons had a slagging match with him on his way up the tunnel, having been subbed off. And it was, for me, one of the most disrespectful moments that I can remember from a Celtic player towards the management. I do recall on one occasion wee Joe Miller coming on in the Cup. In a cup game, he was subbed on by Billy McNeil. Then he was subbed off in the same game, Amy. This, honestly, and there's footage of him coming off the park, and he virtually took his jersey off, and he's shouting at Billy McNeil. Obviously, Jinky and Jock Steen had their wee coming togethers now and again. But that takes me back to a point I was going to make earlier about managers and about the fact that, you know, we believe them. We actually believe in them. We believe what they say. We really buy into them as people, and not just as managers, but as personalities and characters. And I'll be the first to say I bought into Brendan Rodgers. Let's not rewrite history. I totally bought into what Brendan Rodgers was selling. The cracks started showing when Danny McGrain, for example, started talking about things that may not have happened. And then Alan McAnally starts telling Kevin and I that Brendan's already on his way to Leicester. We didn't believe him. Because it was, I think it was in January that he told us that. And I've totally bought into Ange, and I don't regard the two of them, Colin, as the same type of character. But rewind to the late 60s, early 70s, and Celtic are on a pre-season tour of America. They had a successful pre-season tour in 66-67, which was the kind of pretext of the most famous season in the club's history. They went back, and when they went back, Jock Steen flew home early for talks with Manchester United. Now, this is just a point of record. This happened. He went home early, leaving Sean Farrell in charge of the Celtic squad over in the States because Man United wanted him as the manager. So this allure, not just of the money, but the allure of these clubs down south has always existed and will always exist. I think the worst part of the last few weeks is the fact that some of the clubs that are being linked with Ange, you think, well, there's no way you're going to leave Celtic for them. But Rodgers did. Rodgers did leave Celtic for Leicester. You know, so there's always that wee niggle in the back of my mind. And I'm just thinking, if you've got a plan for Ange Postecoglou beyond, let's say, the 3 or 4 years, which seems to be the average of a Celtic manager, then maybe that's the way to keep him on board and keep him at this football club, because I think he would be good for this football club in a role like the director of football.
Yeah, I think when you look at it, Paul, one of the things that really was the telltale sign that Rodgers was on his way is it felt as if he'd got as far as he could with the investment that Celtic were going to give him. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were talking about these players that had maybe flew into Scotland, and then the deal didn't get done because we moved the goalposts and we changed the sort of financial tag that we were going to pay. And the players that Rodgers had identified and wanted to bring in to get Celtic to that next level and try and qualify for the last 16 of the Champions League. And Celtic weren't going to put that investment into the club at the time. Mm-hmm. And you can see he's doing the exact same thing at Leicester just now. He's speaking about the sort of lack of investment that he's getting. And
he's getting the excuses in early.
It's almost coming full circle. Whereas with
he inherited a very different team to the one that he's got right now as well. So, and very similar to the Celtic situation, that you know, the Leicester that he joined is a very different Leicester to Leicester he may believe in. Like, I totally agree with you, Colin. You're spot on.
But see, the thing as well, you know, when we think back, if you're trying to be as fair as possible, right, and there's Brendan Rodgers, and he's got this domestic dominance, but at that time, let's not forget, we didn't really have anybody challenging us, right? Now, when you look at his first season, we won the league by a canter. Was it 30 points? It was a massive points gap. The following season, we won it by 9. Aberdeen were second. We won the league by 9 points, right? And if, for example, you have had some investment, so you've been able to go out there and buy Orson Edward for £9 million, for example, you've been able to bring in expensive players like Scott Sinclair.
Chris Julian.
Yeah, well, Chris Julian came later, didn't he? He came under.
Was it? I thought Lenny. It was. Oh, okay.
But the investment was there. And imagine speaking to your board of directors, Amy, right, and saying, well, I want Castagne and I want John McGinn, and others have been mentioned that he didn't get. And the board will be saying, but what have you done for us in Europe? Because let's be honest, he done nothing in Europe. So sure, you can dominate Scottish football without the level of investment that Brendan Rodgers wanted to kind of push that envelope. And for me, I don't think he had the bargaining power because he didn't have the results in Europe to fall back on.
But then another token, when you look at it, what did Ange have when he came in? He was rebuilding that team from scratch.
Different scenario with Ange.
Yeah, okay, Rodgers was kind of taking over a dialer team, which, again, didn't get the investment that it should have got. when you look back at some of the signings that Ronnie Dyla had to make to that team,
Colin Kazim Richards, now,
Carlton Cole, guys like that. I mean,
I'd love big Carlton Cole to come on Axel.
He was part of the Legends team, wasn't he?
Like, oh, that's right.
The Brayhead Masters thing. But when you look at it, Dyla was never backed. Rodgers was backed to an extent, but wanted backed even further. Mm-hmm. Neil Lennon was backed almost unequivocally. I mean, there was very little that Neil Lennon wanted that he never got. I mean, you could maybe put it down to Ivan Toney, but that was a personal decision to then go for Albin Ayeti over Ivan Toney. And then Ange has been backed very, very well since he came in. He's rebuilt the team. Yes, OK, we've had to sell some of the players, but that was coming to the end of the cycle. Mm. Now, when you look back at last January, you look back at this summer, and he's already speaking about investing again this January, we are backing him. And he didn't really have a lot in European football to say, yeah, we can trust you that you're going to spend this money wisely. We've took the risk on it at times, and it's paid off for us. You just wonder if we took that risk on someone like Rodgers or Dyla, what kind of position would we be in just now?
I think it's all about the moment in time. And if you imagine Ange Postecoglou, where Celtic were when we started discussing the possibility of him coming over from Japan to manage the football club, where we had been led up the garden, down the garden path, and then at the last hurdle tripped over with the Eddie Howe deal. We needed something to happen pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. So I think that, I'm not going to say that there were demands, but I'm pretty sure he would have made it clear, Amy, in the discussions with Celtic that, right, I'm not going to bring 17 people with me, but you are going to have to allow me to strengthen this team, because it really needed strengthened. We all know that. So, yeah, it's a moment in time. I find it really interesting that we still have pivotal players that were introduced by Ronnie Dyla. It's also interesting that we're still talking about Brendan Rodgers all this time later. And I think we've got a better man than all of the guys in Ange Postecoglou. I want to keep him. I want him to be the director of football. We've got Stefan Halle. Is that the right way of pronouncing your name? Sorry if it's not. It's the original facade underpinning that's listed. That's what I thought. I thought it was something to do with that facade. Good word. Thank you for that. And Keith Ogden, who has supported Axon for a long time. Keith, afternoon all from Plymouth. Hopefully you're enjoying some decent weather down there as well. Gary Melrose, is it just me or does the Motherwell game still feel like an age away? It does. I think once we get tomorrow night out the way, Amy, we can start fully concentrating on the Motherwell game. We really won't know what we've got to play with until after the international games are finished as well. Very difficult for Ange to plan for that. Are you expecting us to get basically back into the saddle and back to winning ways this weekend?
As Colin says, it's probably like the worst time to lose, the worst time to try and conjure up anything right now, because it's the complete unknown. It's the unknown, how will this side respond? You know, it's been the best part of a year since they lost domestically in the league. And yeah, now there's been 2 weeks to almost mull over it, analyse it to death, you know, go through every single intricate detail, although I think the resounding was it was just not a very good performance. But yeah, it's
Don't blame the jerseys.
It's I managed to somehow forget that, and now I've just like, I've got sore eyes just thinking about it again. It's a horrible time to lose before an international break, isn't it? It's like, it's just the worst. It just drags on. And then, yeah, you hope there will be a response, but it's quite unknown right now. And it's hard. If it's only 4 days, even a week, you can go, right, that's an intense week. But when you don't have your whole squad at your disposal, certainly not your regular starting 11, albeit they weren't the ones actually starting on the pitch against St Mirren. Yeah, it's just a lot of absolute unknown right now.
Yeah, it is, Colin. And I think that when you're looking at the way that, you know, Celtic had gone such a lengthy time without any real hiccups in the league, it's always going to happen. But, you know, we've spoken all about the selection and whether or not so many players should have been rested, etc. But you would think that as a squad, it's a challenge that we can learn from. And Ange Postecoglou, it's something he can learn from as well.
Yeah, definitely. you can go back and say we shouldn't have made the 6 or 7 changes that we made. Why change a winning formula, especially when you're just about to get into this international break? There wasn't exactly a game in the midweek to look forward to either. You can also say that St Mirren did very well to take advantage of the couple of chances that they had, and Celtic couldn't take theirs. And when you look back at the last sort of couple of games that Celtic's had, and probably throughout the rest of this season, we've probably been guilty of not taking as many chances as what we've had. Even when you look back at beating Dundee United 9-0, that could have been 11, 12, 13 quite easily with some of the chances that we've gotten. You don't want to be greedy, but sometimes when you don't get as many chances and you're not taking that...
I'm greedy, mate. I want the stadium to be rebuilt and the team to be rebuilt. I don't think there's anything wrong with being greedy. 9-0, I want 10. Yeah, I've never seen, you know.
Oh, absolutely. But what I'm saying is you would be classed as being selfish or greedy if you said, it was 9-0, but I'm still not happy walking away from that because it should have been 11 or 12. That's the way some people would act, right? But some of the chances that we've had, they're just not falling properly. We've not taken them. And when you get to a game maybe like St Mirren where we didn't create as many chances as we or as many clear-cut chances, when you're kind of snapping at the half chances that we get, we're going to end up with results like that every now and again. The important thing is that we keep creating the chances and we keep getting in those positions and then get to the point where...
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Eventually, we have another game where it clicks and it goes to maybe 9, 10, 11, 12, nothing, whatever it may be. But we've got to keep creating those chances. As I'm saying, it wasn't the best team performance. He probably shouldn't have tinkered with it as much as he should have. The only thing that really disappointed me was there wasn't that opportunity to almost immediately come out and say, we're sorry, we did wrong, let's go and take this into the next game and channel it to our to what we want to do and what we want to achieve. And Motherwell, they're a sort of hit and miss team so far this season. They started really well.
They were so unfortunate against Hearts. Like, the afternoon after we played St Mirren, honestly, it was like they're due. That's my worry, because the international break equally came at a terrible time for Motherwell. You'd say that like with the loss, but they were so unfortunate against Hearts. You know, I guess ended up something like 20 shots on target, because they're very much improved under Stevie Hammer. But oh my god, it was just like, I actually felt for them. She's like, this is not fair.
It just
Celtic, who done nothing.
Yeah, it'll interest me how Hammer lines up at Celtic Park. Because obviously Hearts, anybody would have loved to have played Hearts at that point with the amount of injuries that Hearts were carrying. Obviously missing guys like Liam Boyce, and I don't know how many defenders they're missing just now.
The back of Europe as well, European exploits.
Exactly. So it was probably a really good time for Motherwell to come up against them. And as you said, if they'd got something, they could have kept that momentum going. But just now you're sitting looking at it going, right, Celtic have came off this defeat. They're going to be hungry to try and prove everyone wrong that people starting to... I mean, I seen some nonsense on social media. It's like, is Ange starting to lose the dressing room? Are they not impressing them? And I'm like, it's one result. People, we need to go over it and go over it fast. Yeah, we've not scored in a couple of games. But you think of the teams that we've come up against in those couple of games as well. And it's a case of, if you'd have asked me 12 months ago, could we be in this position when we lost to Livingston? I mean, 12 months ago we were saying, are we going to finish first? Are we going to finish second? Are we even going to finish third? Now we're kind of saying, right, we've lost that sort of 5-point gap that we had, but how quick can we get it back? It's a case of looking forward now and being positive and looking ahead to the great games that we've got coming up, as opposed to looking back and saying, is he even the man for the job, which was a discussion right about this time last year, and he'll tell you that himself. he said that when he was away down in Australia, he's saying how he was a favourite for the sack back in December. Now he's took the team to two trophies and potentially a lot more this season.
I love how Colin says down in Australia, like he's like doing at the shop there, just down in Australia. Just when you're talking Hearts, you've mentioned Hearts a couple of times, Anna and Craig Gordon, and by no means am I sitting here thinking we should have kept Craig Gordon, because I've said in the past that it was the right time to actually for Craig Gordon to part company with Celtic. It's just that we didn't do our business properly and we ended up with the wrong goalie. But he's 37? No, he's not. He's 39. He's 39 years of age. And he's got 72 caps, Colin. And you think, well, you know, goalkeepers, etc. He's lost a couple of years. Sometimes you can put that on the end of your kind of career at 39. How long can he remain number one? Can I mean, 72 caps? Yeah.
I think he's got another 3 or 4 years.
You think?
There's no one coming through.
I mean, how many caps could you win in 3 or 4 years? I'm just thinking, is he possibly looking at 100 caps? Because, yeah. I mean, that record's been set by Kenny Dalglish, right? 102.
102.
When was that? That would have been back in the 80s that he got his kind of last caps, right? Because he didn't go to the World Cup in 86. Fell out with Alex Ferguson, didn't he? Yeah. Over the fact that Fergie didn't want to select Alan Hansen, if you remember back. So Kenny Dalglish is the player manager of Liverpool in 1986. They win the double. Alan Hansen's one of the best defenders in English football and he doesn't get selected for the World Cup. So, he said he pulled out the squad, but it was a big spat. But 102 caps at that point, and that was in 1986. And it's, you think, I'm not comparing Craig Gordon to Dalglish, but you never know. You might hit that 100 cap.
I think he could easily do it. I mean, you're talking with these Nations Leagues and the qualifiers and the playoffs. You could be playing something in the region of 11 to 15 games a year for your country.
It's the competitive nature of it, Colin, because in the friendlies you might give somebody a game because it's not a competitive game, whereas with most of the games being competitive, you're going to be playing your strongest goalie. I'm going to bring up this point by Frank Brennan before I throw one over at Amy. Frank Brennan says, when Fergus McCann saved our famous club back in 1994, almost 30 years since the takeover. That's incredible. He immediately spoke of building a 60,000 all-seater stadium, and I thought that was 10,000 too many, and he proved to be right and me completely wrong. He was a visionary, was Fergus, and there was a couple of really early interviews on A Celtic State of Mind that we did with Tom Grant, ex-board member who remained at Celtic after Fergus took over, David Lowe, some guy called Jim Orr, never know what happened to him, and Willie Wilson. And we spoke about the takeover, and the amount of insight we got from those four individuals was quite incredible. And one of the things that stayed with me was Fergus obviously was inspired by a lot of the Canadian sports that he was a fan of at the time, and a lot of the stadiums had built-in hotels within the stadium whereby you could wake up, Amy, open your curtains, and you're in the stadium. Kind of thing, and that was a big plan that Fergus had. It didn't come to fruition. If you want to find out why, then listen to the old interviews. I'm going to come to you, Amy, around Scottish football's TV deal. The broadcasting deal has been getting a bit of airtime. You've got Aberdeen coming out speaking against some of the misinformation that's been peddled by Rangers. Celtic, I think, have remained silent, but they're going to be part of the crisis talks to try and get this deal over the line. It's a 4-year deal worth quite a few million to Scottish football. Where are you standing? Are we underselling ourselves? Do you think it's quite a good deal?
I think there's a lot of holes in it. I don't think it's been the most transparent conversation. I think Dave Cormack's comments yesterday are interesting. Obviously, that's just sheer opinion on his part, but he's got a right to be able to have an opinion. So, meant to be the beauty of a democracy. I'm trying so hard to dance around this. I have my doubts over it. And I'm a huge fan of promoting Scottish football in the best possible light. And that is all I want.
Yeah, but I think the figures can sometimes be misconstrued. And I think that's what Dave Cormack was saying yesterday, I think it was, that when you look at a game-by-game basis, Colin, I know that's something you keep an eye on as well, that maybe we're not underselling ourselves as much as they're just being a league table and saying, Sweden get this amount, Scotland gets this amount. It gives you the freedom to sell broadcasting rights to other companies such as Premier Sports, etc., etc.
And maybe Dave Cormack doesn't understand the whole ins and outs of the TV deal as it stands. Because as he says, what is it? He wants to put something like 80 games a season out there, including pay-per-views. But what happens to the other 168 games that's part of the league season? When we're talking about the Swedish and the Norwegian deals, every single game's covered that's put on, whether it be a sort of subscription pay-per-view service or it's shown on live TV. Whereas, for example, if we go into this weekend, Celtic versus Motherwell, that game's not shown on TV, but that's part of your TV deal because Sky have decided that you can't show that game on TV. Yeah. That's part of the contract. So when you're talking about it being 260 odd thousand pounds per game, that's only what's actually allowed to be shown on television. If you break it down across it, it's a terrible deal for Scottish football. I think the TV deal, this rush to get ourselves into a new TV deal when we're only 2 years into a four-year contract already, makes no sense. I think, to be perfectly honest, Scottish football has massively undersold itself, and I don't think that Sky is the part.
It has in the past, and it's why is it now just coming to fruition right now? I think that's an interesting point as well. Yeah. What all of a sudden is someone just sort of like woke up and smelled coffee that for the best part of 20 years has been an absolutely shambolic showing.
And I wouldn't say that Sky is the best partners for Scottish football either. I don't think Sky have put anywhere near the investment into Scottish football as they do for other things. I mean, you take a look at the level of interest that's been gathered now in the English Women's Premier League. They're showing the games on Main Event. They're putting the games as a sort of broadcasting thing on Sky Sports News. They're talking about it in depth. They're providing more pre-match and post-match coverage for that than what they are for Scottish football. And look what happened, and I think it was Saturday or Sunday, Arsenal were playing at the Emirates, 57,000 for a women's game.
Yep.
And that all comes because of the Sky PR machine. It's made the Premier League what it is.
What's the pricing like, Colin, for a game like that?
I reckon it's, like? I don't know off the top of my head, but I would assume it's a lot cheaper than a men's game. I would say probably about 15, 20 quid.
If you look at last night as well, there's the Merseyside derby. You know, that's a newly promoted Liverpool as well. Yes, it's the Merseyside derby, but there's still a newly promoted side, and the Cop's completely sold out. Cop was stunning last night, as elsewhere in Anfield. You know, I'm just focusing on the Cop, but that's even a newly promoted side, and that's them on Sky Sports. Can you imagine Kilmarnock getting that sort of coverage, that sort of in-depth? You know, they only get that if Celtic or Rangers come into town as well,
and if they give us tickets.
I think it's appalling the way that Sky treats Scottish football. I think BT treats Scottish football a hell of a lot better, and they don't even have any rights to any of the games. With the pundits that they use, with the sort of coverage that they still give it at the weekends, even when you look at what is their version of Soccer Saturday, they spend a lot more time concentrating and promoting the Scottish game than what Sky do. You're lucky if Sky get the badge of the team that we're playing, right? Sometimes no, it tells you we're playing Dundee United and it's a Dundee badge that comes up.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
This is the thing, is that we are so desperate to jump into this new TV deal with Sky, despite all of these flaws. There is different ways about it, whether it be other media partners, whether it be going on our own and launching a league service like the League of Ireland do, where every game is put on pay-per-view and you're able to pay a subscription service once a year and you're able to sort of generate that revenue between the 12 teams. Looking at it, it's a pathetic deal that we've got in Scotland, to be perfectly honest. And I understand why Celtic are just voting for it, because there doesn't seem to be much interest in actually making a change here. Yes, okay, I think it's Rangers and Livingston that have stood up against it, but you need this 11-1 kind of voting thing. And when you've got teams like Aberdeen and Hibs that are saying, yeah, let's do this, let's go ahead, at the end of the day, it's What difference is one vote going to make?
Colin has some really strong views on that, Amy. I didn't realise he was going to be all ranty on a Monday afternoon, but thanks for that, Colin. Mo comes in, a Symmetro Celtic Park would have a capacity of 80,000. Can you imagine that? Especially if we had one of the lockout games again where it was all just Celtic fans. That would be incredible. There was talk earlier about Celtic strengthening again in January. Amy, question for you. Do we require another centre-half? Sounds like a strange one considering we've already done some business in bringing Carter Vickers in permanently as well as Maurice Jentz. But I think what the St Mirren game showed us is that a couple of bad moves here or there in terms of injuries and you're playing a partnership that might not work and it could be one of the biggest games of the season. Do we need another centre-half?
Not a panic buy. Only if Ange Postecoglou thinks he needs a centre-half, then he needs a centre-half. But I don't think on the basis of one game, albeit not a great game, proves that as well. You know, and I agree. Obviously, I don't think she made the whole scale changes that we did, but it's still a Celtic side that are more than capable of, you know, defeating St Mirren. That's no disrespect to St Mirren. So if he thinks that we need one, then yes, but I wouldn't just be impulsively going, right, we need a centre-half.
What's your thoughts, Colin?
I said even before the window closed, I'd have signed another centre-half. I said at the time we were only an injury or two away from being in the sort of position that we were there on a week on Sunday. Look, it's a difficult one because in hindsight you can say, yeah, well, we could have been doing with it on Sunday. And then on the other hand, you could have been saying, well, the guy's just picking up a wage for sitting on the bench and maybe even not getting into the squad. But you'd rather have that strength and depth where you've got the ability to do so rather than say, right, well, come January, we need to get someone in. And between now and January, we've got to sort of pedal towards there. I'd rather have too many options than not enough options, especially when we're kind of competing on all four fronts this season.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I think I've asked the question, what did Ange learn from that particular result, from that performance? And it could well be that there may be the opportunity in January to bring in certain players for positions. And Chris Sutton made the point that the most important player at Celtic is Cameron Carter-Vickers, and I don't think I would disagree with that. We've mentioned earlier on that we're up for a Football Content Awards down in Manchester, 16th of November, I think the awards are. And we're up for Best in Video. Natasha's up for Best in Women's Football. If you want to vote for us, the link is underneath the video. Also, I didn't get the chance to ask you this, Amy. We are releasing a charity single for Christmas. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Do you want to sing on it?
No. I'm worse than you. Like, it is horrendous. I love to sing. Like, I love it. And I traumatise all my friends, my family. And yeah, I'm a total belting out in the car, really, really singing. But oh, I'm horrendous. Like I am so tone deaf. It's frightening.
Would you recommend anyone?
Brooke Cole.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say Brooke. yeah, we are going to be releasing a single for Christmas to raise money for St Mary's. And also we are going to go live at Gracie's in January, but all the tickets are sold out. If you want to go on a waiting list or maybe on the mailing list for the next gig, then just click on the link underneath the video, leave all your details, and I'll send you an email when the next gig is arranged. We're going to have to Nash. It's been an absolute pleasure once again. Monday afternoon, Axe on Bulletin. Thanks, everybody, for getting involved. Thank you, Colin and Amy, for joining me on A Celtic State of Mind.